All right, let me ask you guys a question. Now, I wish we had the text line because this would probably go a little bit better, but Nathan, you can help me and you can answer it. The fact that we have done this show without taking any phone calls or reading any texts, and it's a Friday before a holiday, is just a real testament to me and you, Nathan, a real testament to us. But how do you guys handle fantasy football when it's time to pay? Because everything seems fine and dandy when it's time to get people rounded up to play fantasy football. Like, everybody is into, hey, let's watch the football. Hey, let's watch the games. Hey, there's a chance you could win money at the end. There's also a chance that you can lose money as well. Some of you have been playing fantasy football in this league for 8 years, and you ain't never won the league. You're 400 down in this league. But every year, you put in your $50, you put in your $75 because you want to play with the bros. I just want to know how people handle the financial aspect of it. Because I'm telling you this, nah, man, we putting all our money in the beginning of the season. I'm not going to have to track you down and then your team didn't do as well as you thought. You kind of lost interest in week 12. Now it's Christmas time and you now slow playing the money. Nah, man. Nah, I don't want to do that. We boys, but we not that cool. Come on now. I don't play fantasy, so maybe I'm speaking incorrectly. I don't know how y'all do it. That's why I'm asking. Nathan, you play fantasy football? How do you handle the money? Because to me, the fairest thing about the money is just, hey, before we draft the team, everybody put their money in the pot. You trust the commissioner, you put that money off to the side, and then at the end of the season, that money better be there. That seems like the right play to me, but I don't know how folks do it.
Look, well, to your first point, you're the only guys that showed up to work today before this holiday weekend. I mean, Fesco and Dusty were here, but Cody and Gold weren't here. None of the producers have been here. So, yeah, kudos to you for getting through this Friday before
the
holiday
weekend.
Thank
you, man. You know what? I deserve more credit for showing up at work. That's what I'm saying. I deserve more credit.
Yeah, 100%. I'm an average fantasy football player. I'm in two leagues. Some years I'm good in them. Some years I'm not good in them. In one of them, I'm just a regular player. I put my money in before the season. I draft my team. I set my lineup. In the other one, I'm the commissioner. And let me tell you, you know those videos of the repo guys, the repo reapers that just come out and get people's truck and they play the dramatic music?
I've seen them.
That's what I feel like trying to collect this money. It is real. These people, They want to talk about all, you know, the scoring, and they want to talk about putting defensive guys in there. They want to talk about the trade deadline. They have all these ideas for the perfect fit. We got to do this for the punishment. We got to select the draft order this way. Hey, man, you got my $50? Crickets. Crickets, dude. It is the worst.
That's not the way I want to play fantasy football.
I would never wish being a commissioner on anybody else, but yeah, just pay before the draft.
Yeah, pay
man.
Your dues.
Get it
so
over
the
with.
Last time that I was in a fantasy league, we did a weekly fantasy league, and it was on DraftKings. So it was like me, 8 of my friends, and it, you know, it's a daily fantasy league. But you, in order to even build your team, you had to put the $10 up. And then we had it now. We did have at the end of the season, the person who had the highest number of wins at the end of the season, everybody put in an extra 20, and then that person got a bonus for having the most wins or the highest score. I can't remember how we did. It's like 4 or 5 years ago. But yeah, then it was like, $20. I'm not chasing you down. You know you owe me $100. You know that. And I know that. I know where you live. I know your moms, your wife, your kids. I was at your daughter's christening. Come on, man. Pay me my $100. That's what I mean. That's why I don't play fancy. I don't want to be in that situation with my friends.
Man, it's crazy. It is not for the weak. And it makes you know, they got the auction leagues where you can
bid. I don't know anything about this.
And so the regular draft is a snake draft.
Yeah, that's all I know is a snake.
The other one is, we buy in for $50 or $100, but instead of going in order, we just say, all right, Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, he's worth like $8
or sell him to the highest. That, to me, sounds better and better because you got to bring the money to the draft or else you can't draft anybody. As a commissioner, I'm leaning more and more towards an auction league every year.
Okay. All right. I was curious to just get your thoughts. I didn't know if you played fantasy.
So these people are skipping out on their fees. That's the answer.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I was just curious. All right. A couple of thoughts. And I do want to play a little bit of Cowboys, a little bit of Packers. We'll get into a lot of different things here in this 5 o'clock hour. How I would like to start the 5 o'clock hour is saluting the University of Nebraska. What they pulled off was really impressive yesterday. Now, maybe you're not giving Nebraska a lot of credit because it is not a long drive. And yes, if Missouri was playing at an NFL stadium 3 hours away, I probably wouldn't have been here yesterday and I would have been at the game. But I'm telling you this, Missouri wouldn't have put 65,000 people at Arrowhead. KU would not have put 65,000 people at Arrowhead. K-State wouldn't have done that. There are not many fan bases that would have shown up, taken over a city and a stadium the way that Nebraska did yesterday. You got to salute. There's some fan bases that are different than the other ones. Kentucky in basketball has one of those kind of fan bases in Big Blue Nation. Nebraska is one of those kind of fan bases. LSU, we hear the stories every year at the College World Series, how they go when they eat up all of the Jell-O shots. There's a certain portion of college fan bases that are just a cut above everybody else. You saw that in full effect yesterday. That looked like a Chiefs home game yesterday. It had all the energy. It had the look and feel from the crowd of a Chiefs regular season game. Nebraska as a whole, as a nation, as a fan base, decided, yeah, we're going to make this a home game for us. Not a neutral site where it's 40,000, it's going to get loud sometimes. No, we are going to go to Kansas City and we are going to take this place over. So I will at least want to start off this 5 o'clock hour by giving Nebraska a whole lot of credit for what I saw from them yesterday. It was a good game. It was a good win. Good way to kick off their season and get things going. It was a star-studded event. Taylor Swift was there. Travis Kelce was there. Jason Kelce was there. Brittany Mahomes was there. It was football royalty was in attendance yesterday at a college football game. If they can continue to keep that vibe going, keep teams that matter here locally, keep it relevant, keep a national kind of regional feel with this thing, I'm very, very interested in them continuing this Kansas City Classic, Arrowhead Invitational, whatever they're going to end up calling it. I'm very, very intrigued at them continuing to do that if the business side and the money side works for all parties. So that's number one that I want to get to. Number two is, I think the question with the Royals is, can their diet only consist of bad teams? Can the Royals pull this thing off by continuing to fail against the premier teams and just beat up on everybody else? Now, maybe the argument is that's what they did last year. That's what Vern said. Well, last year they didn't really prove that. They just beat up on the bad teams and they went 12-1 against the White Sox. Touche, kind of hard to argue that. But now you're looking down the stretch. I'm not saying you got to win all these series against the good teams. You can't lose all of them either. They've got this weekend against the Tigers. They've got a series against Philadelphia. They've got a series against Toronto. They've got one against Seattle that might be the most important regular season series they've had at Kauffman Stadium in a very, very long time. I mean, you still got to play good teams. Now, you got to take care of the other business. The Royals have a 9-game homestand. In that 9-game homestand, they play 3 games to kick things off against the Tigers. They also, on the backside, have the Twins and the Angels. It goes without saying, you got to beat up on both of those teams. The Twins have basically packed it in, and they're playing out the stretch, and the Angels haven't been good since that movie in the 90s. So you got to do what you got to do against those teams. But where I think the belief part of things come in, and I know the text line doesn't work today, but I read the text line enough to know you guys are very skeptical about the Royals when they play a team that is close to their weight class. You trust the Royals to beat up on the Rockies. You trust them to beat up on those kind of teams, but they haven't proven to me, it doesn't seem like they've proven it to you, that when they play heavyweight contenders, or at least, I don't know what the pound is right below heavyweight, but you get the analogy. They haven't shown an ability to really stand tall up against those kinds of teams. So this is another opportunity. If the Royals can win this series and they're 1.5 games back, 2 games back of Seattle, and they continue to keep it close and they continue to keep it relevant, I don't think they'll be a top story every single day. I don't think that next Thursday, we're talking a lot of Royals baseball when it's the first day of the NFL season, or next Friday when it's a Red Friday. But if the Royals can just get through this stretch, and when they come back for their next homestand where they play Seattle and Toronto, I think that Kansas City is going to respond very well. I think that Kansas City is going to show up for the Royals if those series end up meaning something and end up being important. One thing that we have talked about today is still the top story in sports. The Cowboys have traded Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. Here is Adam Schefter trying to explain the Jerry Jones logic behind all of this.
Jerry Jones felt like this was his modern day version of a Herschel Walker trade. He felt like he needed to do something dramatic to shake up things for a team that has not reached the conference championship game in 30 years, that has not gotten past the divisional playoff round in 30 years. And by making a blockbuster, shocking trade the way he once did with Herschel Walker, he could inject youth and picks and another player into his team and recreate some of that excitement that the Cowboys had the last time they went on an extended postseason.
I don't understand what Jerry Jones is thinking. I don't understand what Jerry Jones is talking about if that's how he feels. This is not the Herschel Walker trade. It's not the Khalil Mack trade. I told you guys, if you're going to make this trade, you have to check certain boxes. I'm not trading Micah Parsons to a team that's better than we are. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me to do that. When the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, they didn't trade him to Buffalo. They didn't trade him to a team that could use a number one wide receiver that they could then turn around and hurt you with. They traded him to the Dolphins, who haven't been good since Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, who haven't been good since Snowflake. It doesn't make sense to me to trade him to a team that's higher up the food chain than you are. If you're also going to make this trade, you got to fleece the other team. They did not fleece the Packers. They fleeced the Vikings back in the day for Herschel Walker. They got 3 first-round picks, 3 second-round picks, and additional picks. If we were talking about them getting 8 different selections, then yeah, I'd very much entertain that. Hey, Jerry, you really got them on this one. Yeah, sure, you had to give up a premium, but you got back a premium in return. You could have got this at any point over the last 6 months. You traded 2 first-round picks and a starter. A lot of teams would have gave you that in March if that's what you were interested in. You probably would have got more than that if that's all it took to go get one of the 5 best defensive players in the league. It just doesn't make any sense. The Cowboys don't make any sense. Jerry doesn't make any sense. His logic doesn't make any sense. He said that it was important to them to get better at stopping the run. So you're telling me in 2025 you traded the guy that can go get you 15 sacks for a guy that can help you stop the run? That's the logic you're trying to sell this? He then said to not count them out, that they could package these picks and still make a trade this season. Who? Who is available in late August, early September, worthy of a first-round pick? Everybody signed already. Jerry, it's go time. It's less than a week until the season starts. There's nobody of that magnitude being traded anymore other than Micah Parsons. Maybe you could have used those first-round picks to go get Micah Parsons. I'll tell you this, you know what? If you offered Green Bay that for Micah Parsons, I bet you they wouldn't give it back to you for 2 first and Kenny Clark. They're looking at you laughing. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Earlier today, we caught up with Kevin Gray. He covers the Dallas Cowboys. I asked him, was he still mad about the trade?
Yes, 100% upset with this still in a number of ways, which I imagine we'll get into. Good to be with you as always, my guy.
Absolutely, man. You know what I've been seeing? I've been seeing Cowboys fans have been going through the 5 stages of grief. Like, I was listening a little bit to Sean Sharif earlier as I was driving in. He was like, oh, you know, you fans aren't as mad as I thought you were going to be. A couple of other Cowboys fans that I follow. It seems to me like you guys have gone through all 5 of those stages in less than 24 hours, and now Cowboys fans have reached the acceptance stage of all of this. You guys seem fine that they traded their best player a week before the start of the season.
I do certainly think there's a number of fans who feel that way. The timing of this is extremely poor because we're literally less than a week away from the start of the regular season when the Cowboys visit the reigning Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday Night Football. But more importantly, you've got a first-year head coach who's trying to reshape the culture of this football team and move this team in a direction toward competing, you know, for a playoff spot. And you know as well as anyone, you don't win games in this league by getting rid of premium talent. And one of the things that's been a refrain that I've seen, you know, from fans is that, you know, by getting Kenny Clark, by getting 2 first-round picks, you are theoretically – getting yourself in a better position to compete for now and in the future, given what the deficiencies are on this defense. And I say to that, that you never trade a Hall of Fame talent who's in the prime of his career at 26 years of age, because you have that talent now. Those two first round picks that you have may not turn out to be nearly as good as the talent that you let go of. And that's the risk that you take with a move like this. So there's a number of reasons why this trade does not make sense, will never make sense. But for the immediacy of this team, they believe they got better because of what they were able to acquire in exchange from Micah Parsons.
I wrote down a checklist that you have to rattle off if you're going to make a trade like this. Number one, you can't trade him to a competitive team in the NFC. This would be a different conversation if they trade him to the Saints, for example, a team that you and I don't think is going to be very good, and there's a chance that the Cowboys get a top 10 pick in exchange for it. They traded him to a team that's better than they are. They beat him the last time they were in the postseason. So we're looking at this pick being somewhere between, I would say, 18 to 25 realistically. And if things go really well for the Packers, an even better selection than that. So you can't trade him in the conference. You got to ship him as far off as you possibly can. B, you have to feel like you fleeced the opposition. There is not a single person that thinks that the Cowboys fleeced the Packers with what they got in return. And if you're going to make this kind of decision, you got to make this decision in April, not in August. I think some of the really important boxes that you need to check if you're going to trade a potential Hall of Fame 26-year-old pass rusher, I'm not sure if the Cowboys did any of those things.
No, they didn't. And the number one thing for me is the first thing that you mentioned was you traded him to a conference rival who has ended your postseason with three of the best teams that you've had over the past 10 years. And the Packers now have a generational pass rusher who is going to terrorize his team for the next decade. And even if you get to the idea of trading Micah Parsons, you do it prior to this year's NFL draft to be able to get the kind of draft capital that you need in order to make this team better now if you feel like this team can compete this year. And the other thing, you know, that I'll say about this too is that when you look at what Micah Parsons brought to this team, you know, that's just from a production standpoint, but now what the future of this team looks like, it puts in very much in doubt how this team could compete moving forward, because they justified this trade by saying we needed defensive tackle help when they had plenty and adequate cap space during free agency to address the defensive tackle spot. They chose not to do it, and now they use it as a justification. Oh, we've got to shore up the run game to trade away their best player on this football team. It just doesn't make sense.
I keep hearing about this handshake agreement. I certainly understand the principle of the handshake agreement. I also think that this part of the context continues to get left out. Micah Parsons cannot agree to a contract with Jerry Jones. The agent has to handle that. This is a violation of the CBA. I feel like in this, Jerry got mad because Jerry doesn't always want to follow the rules. Business just isn't done the way that you did business. Yes, in 1975, you shook a man's hand and your word was your word. But that's not the agreement that the owners and the players have between one another. I keep hearing about this handshake agreement when Micah could never agree to this.
Agreed. I'm right there 100% with you. This is something, if there's blame to assign to Micah Parsons, is that he should have never talked to Jerry and Stephen Jones about contract and about numbers at all. He should have followed the example of his teammates and Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, who immediately got their agents involved from jump to discuss contract terms and when it came to their new deals. Micah thought he was different in the fact that he could go to Jerry, discuss these numbers with him, and then be able to move forward from there. But yeah, Jerry knows better. He knows that he has to talk to the agent in order to consummate a deal and to get one officially done. And he decided that he did not want to bring Mulligetta in because he felt like what was the word and the bond between him and Micah was good enough for Micah to take back to David and things be good from there. But obviously we know that that wasn't the case.
That is my guy, Kevin Gray, who covers the Dallas Cowboys. Wanted to get his thoughts on the trade that sent Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. Let's talk a little Chiefs here, and we'll get to some college football coming up on the other side of the commercial break. So I think the news today is kind of simple. I don't think the Jalen Royals is going to play in their first game of the season. I don't want to make it seem like it doesn't matter. I also don't want to make it seem like it's the biggest deal in the world. I think it's just fine. I think the Chiefs are prepared to deal with a couple of injuries in that wide receiver room, even without having Rashee Rice, who is suspended. Heading into next Friday, if you were telling me that they have Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, Tyquan Thornton, we're not talking about the bevy of tight ends that they have with Kelsey, Gray, Wiley, and Robert Tonyan, who was on the 53-man roster. You got a healthy Isaiah Pacheco. I think Rashard Smith is going to help them some in the passing game. They certainly got enough to get by over the next couple of weeks, whether it's with an injury with Jalen Royals or not having Rashee Rice for the first 6 weeks of the NFL season. They'll be fine. It is not ideal. You obviously want to try to have everybody, but you also understand that injuries are going to pop up. You're going to have them as the season progresses, and it's about managing them. There are some positions on the field that the Chiefs, I think, are equipped to manage those injuries pretty well. Wide receiver number four is one of those positions. They're in a spot that they can manage not having Jalen Royals for 1 week, 2 week. They don't have to put him on IR. They can keep that roster spot. You just simply make him inactive. You still keep it open where you can bring certain players back and move guys around. You know how it's a little bit of a balancing act on how you're going to handle the NFL roster, how fluid it is over the course of the season. So I think you're fine. We'll see what happens with Omar Norman Lott. We'll see if he ends up being healthy enough to play. Sounds like he's been dealing with the high ankle sprain. Seems like he's been dealing with some sort of leg injury. So we'll see if he ends up being healthy and available to play. But, I mean, when we get back from vacation on Tuesday, it's go time. The Chiefs play in a handful of days. You know, it's a divisional matchup. We'll really start to break this game down. But I just wanted to let you guys know kind of where we are from a news standpoint that – the only thing really right now is that you're not going to have Jalen Royals for week one of the NFL season. It seems very doubtful that that's going to be the case. I think we are going to find out. He hasn't been practicing. He hasn't been healthy. I don't really know how you can expect him to play coming up next week in Brazil. Coming up on the other side, we'll continue to get you ready for week one of the college football season. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. All right, welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Friday. Let's talk a little college football. Earlier today, I was joined by my guy Joe DeLeon of the Ruffino and Joe Show. Always great to talk to him. We started with the top game in the sport this weekend. Texas plays Ohio State. How well did Ohio State retool after losing so many players to the draft?
Well, and this applies for Texas as well, but the replenishing aspect is that Ryan Day has recruited a arsenal of former five-stars at so many positions. Jeremiah Smith isn't the only true freshman that is on this team from last year's recruiting class. There are a lot of guys on this roster that have been waiting for their chance to play. There's two guys in particular that I think of that aren't household names that I think will be by the end of the season. Kenyatta Jackson, who is one of their defensive ends, who played very sparingly, but in the sparing reps that he was given last year, rotating in behind JTT and Jack Sawyer, he did some amazing things. He really showed that he is a tremendous athlete that could end up being a riser as a college football player and as an NFL draft prospect. And then the other player, Brandon Innes, has been making a lot of waves in Ohio State circles, and I think is going to be a national name known as a wide receiver in the country, because we already know that defenses are going to be so aggressive to slow down Jeremiah Smith. They're also going to be careful about not allowing Carnell Tate to completely kick their butts. And I think teams are smart enough to be aware of Max Player, who is the transfer that came in from Purdue, that's the most talented tight end in the country. I think that something like Brandon Innes is a great example of how there are all these former five stars that can just step in and ball. This Ohio State team is one of the recent examples of teams, like a couple of the top premier programs in college football, that aren't over committing to digging into the transfer portal to build their rosters. they will have a really talented core of guys that they've been developing. And then when the transfer portal opens up, they'll go and grab an edge rusher. They'll go and grab a tight end. And then they'll go to work once the offseason comes around.
The marquee game in the evening is LSU and Clemson. I really like LSU's team this year. I actually like LSU more than I like Clemson, but there's two things to me that are at play here that I cannot pick LSU. Number one, this game is on the road at night. You never pick against a team at home at night, certainly not with the home field advantage that Clemson has as an organization, as a program. And I'm picking LSU in week one of the college football season. That also just seems like a really bad idea. I think you got to pick Clemson in this one.
I absolutely agree with you on that part. And I don't want to fall for the trap that a lot of times, just in picking games and placing bets, that if someone's eventually going to be due, you think that eventually Brian Kelly would break through and win one of these big opening week games. But I don't think that's going to happen in this. And then the really specific reason is I think along the lines of scrimmage, we're going to see a separation. Not a big one, but a late game scenario where we watch Clemson's defensive line take advantage of LSU's very green offensive line. A lot of those offensive linemen from last year for LSU, one of the best offensive lines in college football last season, it had Will Campbell and it had all of those dudes that got drafted. They are resetting. They are going to have to figure out what their chemistry is. It is a position group that requires, and we've already kind of saw this on Thursday night with a lot of these teams that we had high hopes for to have high-flying offenses, we're starting to see that there is a feeling-out period for offensive line units figuring out how to play with one another. First game of doing that, I don't want to be doing that on the road at Clemson of all places against a defensive line unit that has T.J. Parker, who's going to be a top-10 pick, Peter Woods, who could be a top-10 pick, Devontae Capehart, who's a defensive tackle, who could be a top-75 pick, and Will Helt, who could also be a top-75 pick. They're loaded with NFLers, and on top of this, Tom Allen is the right defensive coordinator to get the most out of this unit that disappointed at times last year. So that is just the biggest part. Lines of scrimmage is always going to be the easiest talking point for a week one game when we have some uncertainties on how we expect teams to perform.
Joe, do you like LSU to make the college football playoff? I asked that question because their schedule is tough. Like, I'm not sure if there is a team in the country that has a much more difficult schedule than the Tigers. Do you have them as a playoff team?
So this is a very, very loaded conversation because for those who might have missed this, the college football playoff announced that they're adjusting their approach to evaluating teams that deserve to get into the college football playoff. They're emphasizing more, after all the criticism that they got last year, wins against marquee opponents, and they're going to reevaluate losses against certain teams. So strength of schedule now is going to matter even more. And I bring this up to say, you just mentioned the difficult schedule. LSU has one of the hardest schedules in college football this season. I think that there's a realistic world, and last year this wouldn't have come to fruition whatsoever because we had three teams that this applied to. I think that there's a world that LSU goes 9-3, and they're one of the last teams that gets in. I think that with the schedule that they have, it will set them up, as long as they don't get blown out in some of these difficult games they have, whether maybe it's against Alabama or it's against Clemson, as long as they're all close losses, I think that there is a very strong opportunity for them to pull out a couple of big wins, to have one of the best resumes in college football, but a 9-3 record that will justify them getting in. I think that we're going to potentially see a complete shift in how the committee approaches putting teams into the playoff field. And I think that we're probably going to see less of the teams that are like SMU getting into the mix, maybe even a team like Indiana getting pushed out if a team like LSU does end up going 9-3. But I think it's also accomplishable to that point for them to go 10-2 and to secure a spot as well.
Let's talk about Alabama and Florida State. It is so weird to say this, but there is a lot of pressure on Alabama. They always say you don't want to be the guy that replaces the guy. Alabama had a couple uncharacteristic losses last year. They missed the college football playoff. They head into another difficult season. This maybe isn't a team that is as loaded as some Alabama teams in years past. It's so crazy to think for a team that could go 10-3, 9-4, it's going to be a lot of pressure on Kalen DeBoer heading into year three if they don't make the college football playoff this season.
Yeah, and I think that the pressure has also built up because surprisingly and suddenly over the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot of driving force for Alabama to be considered to be one of the best teams in the country that will finish the year atop the SEC as one of the highest-ranked teams in the college football playoff. And the buzz almost seems random. I think it's justified, but it seems random. Nobody was really talking about them at the beginning of the offseason, and it just kind of propped up recently as this, you know, this dark horse to surprise everybody. I think where the hype comes from is, one, Ryan Grubb comes back. There's less off of, or when I say comes back, he rejoins Kalen DeBoer, who was the offensive coordinator for when Washington went on their title run that they did. It takes less off of Kalen DeBoer's plate, and I think it's going to activate a lot for Ty Simpson. There are a lot of high expectations for Simpson, who's been around for a very long time and has been able to digest and improve sitting behind Jalen Milroe. But where the talent of this team needs to be recognized the most is that they've got a very gifted offensive line that was very young last year, that was really inconsistent, that I think is going to take a step forward. They have a defensive line that applies in that same exact area. There's some injuries on the defensive line with Tim Keenan, but James Smith is super gifted. This linebacker room's athletic, and their secondary is super, super explosive. There is a lot of athleticism in that secondary that I think can really produce some game-altering plays with picks and pass deflections in key situations. So that's where the hype is coming from. And you, like you said, you don't want to be the guy to replace the guy. It was hard last year. It was hard to get guys to buy in his first year. And you saw the translation to where there were a lot of silly mistakes, a lot of penalties, just a lot of late game mental lapses that really, really hurt them. I think that this is going to be a very different year for Alabama. I just can't get all the way there with them winning the SEC in 2025.
That was my guy, Joe DeLeon. Be sure to check out his podcast. It's called The Ruffino and Joe Show. It's one of the more popular college football podcasts that is out there. Tomorrow is a really special day when you think about it. It's not just the sort of de facto debut for Arch Manning. LSU is playing Clemson, and this isn't a neutral site game. Like, usually this is the game that Jerry Jones gets, and this game is played at Cowboy Stadium. But the fact that this game is played on campus is a really, really big deal. I'm really looking forward to it. Tomorrow is really about Lee Corso and the end of his incredible career. Lee Corso is a lot like Dick Vitale that I'm not sure if you had told them, hey, you're going to be remembered not for being a coach. You're going to be remembered for you being a television icon. And that is exactly what Lee Corso is. There are some people that become synonymous with their sport. John Madden is one of those people in the NFL. If you're of age, you know how big and how important John Madden was. If you love college basketball, Dick Vitale is kind of one of those individuals. That's kind of what Lee Corso is to college football. So tomorrow, for it to be his last day, the last time that he puts on the mascot head, for him to be celebrated, for him to get his flowers while he's still here, is just really, really special. I'm happy that Fox understands that and is putting it on their network too. I mean, ESPN and Fox, I mean, they are fighting right now in college football. Hey, you guys got these games, we got these games, you have a pregame show that directly competes with our pregame show. Like, they are rivals. But for them to understand that at least for 10 to 15 minutes, it's bigger than that, there would be no college game day without Lee Corso. There's no big game at noon. There's no big Fox at noon. There's no pregame show. The highlight of college game day for the last 20 years has been that moment and wanting to see it. And if you have ever been a fan of a team and he put on your mascot head, you know the excitement that you felt when that moment happened. And that's a really big moment. It's a really important moment. So I'm happy that ESPN, they're certainly going to do that justice. And I'm happy that Fox is going to carry that moment as well on their pregame show. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. This has nothing to do with sports, but it just popped up on my Instagram feed during the commercial break, and I just want to talk about it. Nathan, one day somebody had the idea of a movie, and I'm sure someone thought that this was a stupid idea for a movie, but it has turned out to be a multi-billion dollar franchise. Somebody had the idea of, wait, what if we made a movie about whenever you're not there, your toys, they have their own life. And they play and move and sing and dance and have relationships and conflicts. Somebody thought, like, no, that's stupid. No one will go see that movie. No, they went to go see it. And they will continue to keep seeing it. I was reading this one story how, like, the toy stores didn't believe that people would be interested in a Buzz Lightyear toy. I don't know. I felt like I would have bet on Disney, but I don't, what do I know? I'm just a sports talk radio host. I just wanted to share that with you. During the commercial break, I was looking at it. It was just like kind of cool Toy Story toy. And I was like, man, somebody probably thought, this will never work. No, it worked. It's very, very popular. I love the Toy Story franchise. It's actually one of my favorites.
Pillars of my childhood. We watched those Toy Story movies on repeat growing up, man.
I used to play the, they had a Sega game, the Toy Story game on Sega. I used to love that game. I'm not familiar.
Familiar,
you got to play it. It was very fun. Yeah. It was fun. You know, back then it was like, oh, I can be Woody. I can run around. And, oh, it was a lot of fun. And one level, you can fly around as Buzz Lightyear. No, very good fun back
then. That
sounds
fun now. That's like just reliving that would be sick.
I'm with you. I'm on your side. I'm really excited for tomorrow in college football. It's a really, really strong slate. I would say two things that I was wrong about the expansion of the college football playoff, that I just didn't see the vision of it. And I was wrong. I can admit that I was wrong. Number one, I didn't see, like, college football is more fun because of it. Now, it has diluted the regular season. There's no question that it has done that. But it is kind of fun to think about who can make it, who can't make it. Can your team be a part of it? Like, that is an enjoyable experience. I also think, and kind of what the sport needed is, it has been so much about finishing undefeated that it scared you off from playing games that could damage that. There used to be a formula that you would have. You would basically waste September and play three nonsense games. You would play Wagner, North Dakota. You would play nobody for months. And then in October, it will be, oh, yeah, now we got to start conference play. You can't get away with that anymore in college football. That's only good for us. The fact that LSU is willing to go on the road and play Clemson, not at a neutral site. They're not meeting up in Dallas or meeting in Las Vegas. This is, sure, we'll play you guys. Let's go. And they're willing to go to Clemson at night? Great. Sign me up. I can't wait. You got two of the best quarterbacks in college football, two great programs, two great fan bases, and they're kicking off the season. That's the Saturday nightcap. I'm here for it. Texas is playing at Ohio State to kick off the season. Back in the day, we would have called that a playoff elimination game. You lose that game at the beginning of the season, your season's over. It doesn't have to be that way anymore. You can lose two games now and still have a chance. So I would say one of the good things about the playoff is it has just expanded it, where I guess in some ways it's kind of the same. We just end up calling it different. But I mean, there came the point where it didn't mean anything for your team to go to a BCS bowl game. Like, it sounded good, but you know, once players started opting out of those bowl games, it lost its allure. Think of a couple of years ago with K-State, like, hey, are they going to play? Or is Alabama going to play? Are they not going to play? Like, it was this uncertainty about it. That ain't the case anymore. Like, they have made those bowl games matter now. They're part of the college football playoff. So that's just really cool. And it expands it. Now a team like Indiana's got a chance to do it. SMU's got a chance to be a part of these bowl games. I guess they always had a chance. I mean, Kansas made the Orange Bowl, but you guys get what I'm saying. And it's made things more fun. I don't really want too much more expansion than what we already have. I think we have enough teams. And I think what we all want, like, I want teams to play each other. I want to sit down in front of the television and I want to see games that matter against teams that matter. And I want the best coaches and best players. Like, I want the best theater, the best drama. And that's what I think we have in week one of the college football season. We got that in week two. I mean, Kansas plays Missouri in week two. Oklahoma plays Michigan in week two. So it's going to be a lot of fun. One place you can certainly watch some college football this weekend is over on CBS. And remember that Sports Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and also Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Remember to visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get things going today. So special thanks to Paramount Plus. Be sure to check them out this week, as I imagine you'll be watching some college football as you are celebrating the beginning of the season. Nathan, are you a lake guy? I feel like you would be at the lake today, but I feel like Rob went to the lake so you could be here.
Am I a get in the lake guy?
Absolutely. Are you even not. Go around the lake?
Absolutely not. Am I a go, like, down go on a boat, have a drink, be at the lake? Sure. It's not my pastime, but sure. Get in the water? Absolutely. I'm not getting in the lake water.
I'm telling you, I've never, ever been to the lake in my entire life. Never.
I think you're okay. I think you're never. Okay.
Maybe like at summer camp, does that count? I don't know if that counts, but like when I was like 11, sure, that I was, but that, I mean, is like as a 17-year-old or 18-year-old or as adult, have I gotten in my car to drive down to the Lake of the Ozarks to hang out? Not once in my entire life.
The only times in which I have are, hey, the gang's going to the lake. Are you coming? Not, it's not my, you know, idea, not yeah, my no, idea of a good time.
My gang isn't hanging out at the lake.
I don't, Rob's out in Lawrence today.
He
yeah?
is. He is at the okay. KU game. Yeah, he is at KU Wagner. I saw that this is the biggest favorite I think KU's been since 2008. I mean, they're pretty big favorites today. They're not going to be favorites next week, though, so that's important to know.
Big week. You going to be Huge in Columbia week. Next weekend?
Of course. Come on now. That's, I mean, it's a no-brainer. I'm going to be there, of course. I'm tailgating. First thing. What else is more important than that? Nothing. Can't wait to be there at the tailgate. Can't wait to be there at the function. Nathan, you did a great job today, man. I appreciate you. Rob, I hope that you're having fun at the KU game. Good luck to them as they are playing Wagner later today. Good luck to Kansas State. They look to get back to their winning ways. They kick off their season opener at home tomorrow. So it's college football for everybody. I had a lot of fun this week. Hopefully you guys did as well. Have a great Labor Day. I'll catch you guys on Tuesday as it will be game week here in Kansas City. Until then, I'll let Daniel Craig take you home.